I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program was brought to you by 100 Bogart Street, the brand new co-working space in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Learn more at 100bogart.com.
My name is Hannah Forden. I'm the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, but even before I joined the team, I loved listening to HRN during my subway commute. It made the time go quickly and left me feeling inspired for the day ahead. HRN listeners tune in from all over the world, but there are a few traits that we all have in common, no matter where we listen from. A curious palate, the fierceness to make a difference, and a hunger for lifelong learning about the culinary world. As you know, Heritage Radio Network is a listener-supported nonprofit. To deliver the most ambitious, entertaining, and of-the-moment stories in 2018, we need your help. We need to raise $150,000 by December 31st to accomplish these goals and to keep your favorite shows on the air. Together, we can make this HRN's most exciting, impactful, and delicious year yet. No matter how much you choose to give, you'll feel awesome next time you tune in, knowing that we wouldn't be here without you. Become a member by donating today. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and you'll immediately start enjoying benefits such as VIP invitations to HRN events, where you will mix and mingle with your favorite hosts. Plus, we have great member swag. Show off your HRN pride with a t-shirt, or keep your hands safe in the kitchen with an HRN potholder. Memberships also make a perfect holiday gift for all the foodies in your life. This year, why not give the gift of food radio? You'll hear your generosity in action for the year to come. Help keep our lights on and our mics hot by pledging your support today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Thanks for listening.
Good evening and welcome to Fermentabout It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Ized.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I should swallow my beer before we go on air next time. Sorry about that.
This is episode 224 of our some odd season, but I think it's almost 5 years to the date.
It was 5 years because I got the Facebook reminder.
That's pretty awesome.
On this day reminder.
It's been an awesome 5 years. Thank you to all of you listeners for listening either in real time or even just some of the archives. But what a long road and fun road this has been. Speaking of fun roads, we need to do some fundraising.
Yes.
Welcome to Heritage Radio Network's Fall Fundraising Drive.
So most of you know this is a not-for-profit internet radio station. So, you know, we're doing this for love, and we could not do it without all of your support. So there's two ways coming up that you can support us. The first is if you are in the New York City area. 1 week from today, on December 4th, they're having their holiday party and tasting at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. It's called Winter in the Garden. We, Chris and I, will be pouring some delicious Fifth Hammer beer. But there's also going to be some kick-ass chef signature cocktails and then beer, wine, and cider. It's going to be super fun. I'm really, really excited about it. And you can get tickets by going to heritageradionetwork.org/holiday. We would love to see you there. We'd love to pour you a beer there, actually. Then if you're not in the New York City area, you can still become a member by donating today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and there's all kinds of great member swag. You'll get invites, you'll get shout-outs, and most of all, you are helping support an amazing, absolutely amazing radio station that is chock full of passionate people talking about some super cool stuff.
Like delicious things and how to do it. And literally making lives taste better around the world. And it's I'm so proud of this radio station and all the shows on it. And happy to be part of this family. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Speaking of people I'm proud of and happy family, we are being visited here in New York by our good friend John Palmer. He's been on the show before, talking when he came out with his water book, but he is the author of How to Brew. HowToBrew.com is, you know, he shares all the knowledge there. We are who we are, and we're making beers because of this guy, along with Charlie Papazian and a lot of other people that kind of are sharing their knowledge, like the people on this radio station. He's come to New York City.
Listen, we wouldn't have this show if it wasn't for Charlie Papazian and John Palmer.
And we say that in the first episode 5 years ago. We had very similar notes. He's coming to town. We're really excited to have him. He is going to not just do do New York City. He'll be out in Long Island. He's going to bless us in the tap room in Westchester, in the tap room of Fifth Hammer on Friday the 8th at 7 o'clock. But he's also going to Bitter and Esther's Bottle Swap on the 6th. And you can find his full itinerary if you go to bitterandesters.com. Without further ado, we're going to go straight into some pre-records that we've done. One of them is a little bit delayed, the second half, but we had the honor of sitting down with Sam Caligione, Jason and Todd Alstrom of the Alstrom Brothers of Beer Advocate. Sam Caligione is a founder of Dogfish. They were in town doing a really great event, and here it is.
Welcome to Ferment About It. We are here in the second floor of Alewife, Queens, speaking with three people who don't really need an introduction, but we'll give you one anyway. Jason and Todd Alstrom of Beer Advocate and Sam Caligione of Dogfish Head. You've been on the show before, and thanks for coming back. You guys are currently amidst a tour promoting your new book and collaborations. Tell us about that, the name, and how to find more about it. What's going on? Welcome to New York.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Here. It's been too long.
Our tour is probably different than like a Rolling Stones tour, I'd say.
Less bus?
Because we're younger.
Smaller bus.
Smaller bus.
Smaller bus.
And I didn't divorce my 31-year-old wife for a 22-year-old.
Yes. No, yeah. No, Knight's still young, but I don't see that happening.
Project Extreme Brewing.
We were down in Austin, Texas together a few days ago. We'll be on the West Coast where Todd now lives, leading up to EBF LA, which we're super psyched about. It was pretty intentional, the timing of the book coming out. We did a Project Extreme Brewing video series, episode with the Alstrom, Shorts Brewery, Carton, lots of awesome breweries. And we're going to show a few of them here tonight, the Alewife. But maybe talk about the moment of the West Coast EBF that's upon us.
EBF being Extreme Beer Fest.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. I forgot.
December 9th, Saturday.
December 9th?
Yep. We'll be doing the California Market Center. It's in the fashion district of downtown LA. And it's going to be, it's smaller than Boston, but it's still going to be pretty big. There's going to be over 60 breweries, over 200 beers. We're only doing one day, two sessions, with over 1,500 attendees per session.
Wow.
The first Extreme Beer Fest on the road, and it'll be the last.
Yeah, because we've been doing Extreme since 2004 annually in Boston, so this is the first time we kind of took it outside of Boston. Very, very excited for it. Response out there has been great, too.
So, yeah. Are there still, if people want to get tickets, where do they go?
There's tickets.
So no, go, you just to go to Beer Advocate?
You can actually just go to, like, extremebeerfest.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
And what was the inspiration for LA? Did you live out there?
Well, it was kind of a combination of things, but we were looking for another market for it. And we were kind of also playing around. I was living in Denver at the time with my wife and kid, and we were thinking about going somewhere else. We just wanted to do something different. We realized we went to Denver not to work, we went there to live. And we realized we wanted to do something where we lived too. And Denver was saturated. They had like over 200 something festivals happening per year. So LA kind of became an option, and we looked at it, and the more we looked at it, the more we liked the sort of growing scene, because although they're huge, LA's huge, they only had like 60, at the time it was like 60 plus breweries, now it's over 70. So the scene is really cool, and it's very young, very passionate. They play by their own rules, they're not tied to like decades of like grouchy East Coast brewers who complain about everything and get off my lawn sort of shit. It's mostly younger brewers who are just super passionate and they're brewing a lot of really good beer. It's one of those cities where I've had a hard time finding beers I didn't like. I've come across a few but elsewhere you come across a lot. It's just, it was refreshing.
And the, now are you focusing, are you having national, obviously national breweries or breweries from around the country?
Yeah, we have breweries from around the country. We do have a large amount from LA though. Cool. Just to
what's your
kind of
process
show respect.
Curating breweries for EBF LA compared to the traditional EBF in Boston?
It's kind of the same except for the twist that we're working with. So to host a festival in California, you have to work with a nonprofit. So we also thought, what better nonprofit to work with than the local Brewers Guild, which happens to be one of the best Brewers Guild that I've ever seen in the country. So we reached out to them, and they said yes.
Is it the LA or the...
LA.
LA Brewers County Guild, Brewers, right? LA's County. Yeah. Okay, cool.
This kind of playing by your own rules speaks a lot to the nature of your collaboration together as Project Extreme Brewing.
Yep.
In your advertising for it, you're talking about going beyond using the four ingredients of beer, mm-hmm. and celebrating that. What is Project Extreme Brewing and the book?
I'll start. You guys jump in. But okay. For Dogfish, it was kind of... Before it was a term, it was kind of our raison d'etre. Was we opened Dogfish. You know, I was born here in New York City and first started homebrewing here in New York City when I came here after college and wrote my business plan in New York City. And the whole premise, the front page of the business plan was our goal is to be the first brewery in America committed to brewing the majority of our beers outside the Rheinheitsgebot. Mm-hmm. Never mentioned anything about ABV. I just said outside the Rheinheitsgebot, using culinary ingredients and creative techniques. And away we went, and it's true today still. The majority of beers coming from Dogfish are brewed outside the Rheinheitsgebot. And it's so cool, like I'm drinking one of your guys' beautiful beers made with a Polish tea, kettle sour. And it's so cool that there's literally of the 6,000 breweries, I'm sure, over half are brewing outside the Rheinheitsgebot.
Yeah.
When we started Dogfish in 95, there were very few. And it wasn't cool. It was considered disrespectful, weird.
Yep.
And when we went on that journey, it was kismet that Mariah one day told me, hey, there's this website about beer in 90 minutes, the number one rated beer on their website. I'm like, website about beer? Come on.
And, you mean that thing Al Gore invented?
I remember we said it.
What year was that again?
I don't know, like 2000 maybe?
Yeah, so back then there was still, most of the world was not online.
Yeah. Beer world, there was no such thing as online beer world that I knew. So I did an interview with them when 90 Minute was the best rated beer.
You went to the library to go online?
Library?
Do you have a computer? You went to the library.
Exactly. Went to the library.
So I'm microfiching the Ahlstrom brothers, and at any rate, it started an awesome friendship. And as soon as we were in the room, we participated in every Extreme Beer Fest because my folks moved from New York to Western Massachusetts. These guys grew up down the road from me in Munson, Mass. I was in Greenfield, Mass. And so it started a great friendship that led to, I was like, feels like I'm home at the CBF. Can I be the sponsor brewery? And they're like, yes, it feels right for you guys.
We asked you.
That's
all
right.
Never let the truth get in the way of a good story, Todd.
Yeah, then tell me how you remember it.
No, we had one single sponsor back then for all events, and we realized that we could do better. We appreciated their support, but we could do a little bit better and kind of find a brewer that kind of fit each of the festival styles. And as soon as we thought about Extreme Beer Fest, we immediately thought about you. Yeah. I like my side.
Thank you.
My story was better.
The record show.
That's not how I heard it.
We reached out and Sam was like immediately yes. And it just kind of, it's been blossoming since, we start, and the first one too, we were like, can we brew a beer? We're like, have to ask him.
Delaware.
We have to brew collaboration beer. And we did it. We've
done that every year, too.
Yeah.
We break out a map. I'm like, where's Delaware again?
Yeah. And it was great.
It's easy to miss.
And we brewed some beers.
Was that Wayne's World or Bill and Ted's? The Delaware. I'm in Delaware. There was a movie that had...
It had to have been Bill and Ted's, yeah.
Bill and Ted's.
But we brewed a lot of really good beers.
Through the years. And now a bunch of them are in the Project Extreme book.
Yeah, it's kind of cool to share some of those recipes with everyone. And that was kind of like the... When Sam approached us about the book, he had already written books before and one similar, but this one was a little bit different because as the idea unfolded, we're like, we have all these great breweries around us. How about we invite them to kind of join us on this journey and we can help curate that sort of list of breweries and share their recipes and their sort of story, like, you know, the sort of thinking behind it. Why do they brew extreme beers? And that's essentially the book. You know, we're the curators, and we're just sharing their stories. And it's,
yeah, I mean,
it's
we, really we cool. just didn't, you know, go out there and say, all right, who's brewing extreme beer? Let's sort of pick these guys out. You know, I mean, we have relationships with all these breweries, and, you know, they've been to our fests. You know, we've met them at, you know, CBC or Great American Beer Fest for beers and et cetera.
Yep.
Relationships.
You had more of an inside scoop.
Yeah.
And it's not just about them. There are recipes and things for the home.
Yeah, super
as well.
Approachable. Yeah. Like, basically, all the recipes are, you know, partial grain, so you don't need to have a converted mash tun to make them. You can steep specialty grains.
But they've also all been tested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. We tested all the recipes, and just an amazing list of cult breweries. You aren't open in time, Chris.
It's okay.
Tell us about the beer that you just cracked open.
I just cracked open. This is kind of an expression of New York State. So it uses New York State Vienna malt, and then a bunch of New York State hops, as well as New York State honey. It's a honey brown ale. I did the honey about 5 days into fermentation.
Only 4.2.
Only 4.2.
That's great. Thank you.
I want it sessionable.
That's really nice.
This is your first farm, New York State farm?
It's my first. So I have a farm brewery license for New York State, but I also, in New York State, you're allowed to have both a farm brewery license and a regular production license.
Oh,
as long as you make sure you meet the minimum 50 barrels per year on the farm
15,
brewery license. 50. So
50
I can do,
yielded with 100% New York.
Right now it's
products.
Only 20% New York. 2019 it turns to 60, I think.
60.
And then
is that going to be a
challenge
with so many breweries open in New York sourcing ingredients to keep your license or what?
If they...
It might actually promote it, right?
It already has. So,
oh, great.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers with me, but our number of hop acreage
growers,
as well as barley acreage specific and maltsters has, exponentially grown.
Proportionate
since the farm,
to the brewing volume in state.
I mean, I think it's
cool.
Still, it's definitely in development.
Yeah.
We're not, New York State is not a Yakima Valley yet,
yeah.
We've seen a huge amount of growth and a lot of breweries around the state or throughout the state are making a lot of really good beers with locally made with New York State grown.
And importantly, from a production standpoint, thankfully, because of the supply and also the advancement of the maltsters actually malting, they're becoming more modified and the extraction is getting better. At the same time, as the price is kind of going down to make it worthwhile for us as producers.
Yeah.
So the quality is raising at the same time, and at the same time as they're going to be increasing this requirement for us.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is my first of those, and I plan to on a quarterly basis do it.
It's got nice grain astringency and hop astringency. It's nice.
Yeah, but also very, you know, super drinkable. You can just kick back and crush this whole crowler.
Yeah, that's what we're into.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that each state has a different law, or maybe no laws for that, as far as the local stuff. And
yeah.
You know, you look to other states and, you know, the brewers, they're showing the state, you know, we bought X amount of blueberries, pounds of blueberries per year.
Yeah.
You know, cherries, whatever. So it's not just malt and hops.
It you can get creative and hit different farms, not just barley farms. I like New York's done a great job of evolving their laws. No brewer guild is ever happy with exactly where the laws are, but there's a cool law here where if you're less than 3% of a distributor's business, you can leave the distributor. Whereas many states that have franchise law, it's you can't leave no matter if you sell one case.
And then you have like Massachusetts, which you can't leave, but you can do dual, so you can kind
you can
of
add two
distributors. You can add another one and kind of like
you can separate territory.
I challenge you to a duel.
I believe they're still trying to tweak those and have them passed. Or
yeah.
From Wandering Star, we had separate, or we had two different distributors.
And we can self-distribute in New York State too.
Yeah. And do you guys do that?
Yeah.
Right now, we're not signed with anybody. We're just self-distributing. But mostly, thankfully, we've been through our tap room. But anyway, we have an event tonight. How are your events going throughout the country when you're doing this tour? They kind of the same format. You got to adjust it.
We've only done one so far.
And what's happening? Oh, awesome.
Austin.
And it was Austin, Texas.
That was
our second.
That was mostly outdoors. It was 200 plus.
People.
And we showed the videos on the side of the building, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
It was cool.
We waited until dark and showed it on the side of the building. Yeah, it was cool. Did a bunch of...
Yeah, so
signed out. We sold out of books. Signed all the books.
Sold out of books. Yeah.
Tell us what's going to happen tonight and what happened in Austin.
We don't even know.
Your wife always keeps you on your
we
feet.
We did a town hall sort of style thing where at a Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fun.
So, I mean, tonight we're going to show a few of the episodes. The episodes are only, I think, 6 to 8 minutes long. And mostly we love the Q&A.
We get some of the brewers from the book coming, too.
Where, we do? You've heard
yeah,
that?
We do. We do awesome. Yeah.
Where do people find the episodes? Or where will they be shown?
You go to two places, depending on which one you like better. You're not judging. So you go to dogfish.com or beerapp.com/PEB, Project Extreme
PEB.
Brewing.
Oh, okay, yeah. Awesome.
So perfect. You can go to beerapp.com/PEB.
You could watch one, or, you know, watch a couple on one side, watch a couple on the other side.
I don't care where people go to get there, but they're a lot of fun. We did that. The episode with Allstrom is super cool because if no one's ever been to an Extreme Beer Fest, it's kind of the POV.
It's a little bit more wordy. Yeah, a little bit more of a discussion about what Allstrom.
That was probably my first craft beer fest I ever went to.
Was it?
Was
what year did you go?
I think like either 2004 or 2005.
Wow.
When was it still in the round room?
Yeah, and we went Friday night because you used to have, I don't know if you still
We did like a special.
The barrel. It used to be Nutty the Barrel.
Well, thanks for talking to us, and I would be remiss to close this out without thanking you personally for basically inspiring my current life, Eddie, which ultimately led to me marrying and meeting Mary. I joined Beer Advocate in early 2001, before right when I had just started homebrewing, and I would sneak off and I'd be on Beer Advocate while working compliance at Merrill Lynch. I mean, at some finance company. I was working here. And then shortly after that, or at the same time as I did that, I went to Blind Tiger first time, and you were still driving beer up from Delaware personally and delivering. And we were talking about Freestyle Mondays and your former life in a hip-hop group, which one day you'll revive, I'm sure, for all of us.
I don't know.
Well, Chris and Mary, thank you.
The band is back.
We're back under one roof. You haven't made new
songs
yet.
The bus is shorter.
But joining back in 2001, that's like one of the original, you know, it's considered one of the original users.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you guys consider the cutoff of the OG community? Is there anything like
I'd
that?
I'd say anything before we got mentioned on CNN, which was 2002.
Because that was an inflection point?
Yeah.
2001, 2002, that's pretty... Anything under 2003 is pretty old school.
Yeah. Everybody was still sort of on dial-up, except for major cities. I don't know when broadband ever came in. I forget what year that was.
Yeah. Fascinating.
So crazy.
Yeah.
Hard to believe
this.
Where we are now.
We lived through it. Well, congrats, Mary and Chris. The beers are tasting excellent.
Thanks for sharing. Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here with you.
Yeah,
God bless the ale wife. Thank you, Patrick, too, for
and Kyle,
the whole gang for
everybody,
hosting this. Yeah.
Everybody.
God bless America.
Cool event. And good on you guys, because this is an awesome event for people to actually meet and talk to you guys, get to ask questions. That's always, I think, one of the special things about craft beer. And it's still
how altruistic
today,
and
so.
Mutually supportive, and how we're all learning from each other. It has nothing to do with scale. It has to do with passion, and we share that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Cool.
Ferment about it. Ferment about it over here. Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
One 100 Bogart Street is finally open and ready for Bushwick. 100 Bogart is a brand new, state-of-the-art co-working space that provides turnkey workspaces, including open layout desks, meeting spaces, and furnished private offices. Members have access to top-notch amenities such as custom furniture, high-speed internet, spacious kitchenettes with coffee and tea, printers, scanners, and much more. Alongside their professional work environment, 100 Bogart also provides exclusive educational programming for any curious entrepreneur. Heritage Radio Network has made their new office home at 100 Bogart and will host many events there in the future. For more information about their co-working space, visit 100bogart.com and become a member to network, create, and educate.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. This is episode 224. We are here sitting in the studio by our lonesome but playing pre-records. This next recording is from August of this year. It was another fantastic time up at Omegang. For Belgium Comes to Cooperstown. It is such an amazing event, and we had a great time, or I had a great time, sitting down with our old friend, Justin Forsyth. Ladies and gentlemen, Justin Forsyth.
All right, I'm here at Belgium Comes to Cooperstown 2017 with our old friend from episode number 40. When Mary and I were wee young hosts of this show, we're really excited to be in the 200s now. This is kind of insane. But I'm here with Justin Forsyth. How you doing, Justin?
I am doing terrific right now.
It's a fantastic Saturday morning. I just come from the lake. You came. You are bright and refreshed.
Yeah, I got a lot of sleep. A lot of sleep. So I'm good. I'm ready for the day.
Things are going pretty well for you. Just bought a house around the corner, right?
Yes, sir.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's nice being close to work, man. Short little commute. Good place to live.
When we last spoke to you, you were only here for 2 years. Your position has changed a little bit. What is your current title here?
Currently, I'm innovation manager. So I'm the lucky guy that gets to develop recipes and brew on a small system, not a giant production system. And it's been a lot of fun, man. I enjoy the challenges. It's a great job.
What are some of the inspired things that you're doing here, and what how is your innovation directed or
right
or birthed?
I mean, there's a good balance between ideas that our whole innovation group, which includes Phil Leinhardt, our brewmaster, Doug Campbell, the CEO. Our head brewer, Joe Polisino, a bunch of really good people. Sometimes we come up with an idea and then I have to develop that, like the stouts that before we started recording, we were blind tasting. That's always a challenge, to try to hit like a mark that everybody wants. Sometimes I have a week where I could brew whatever I want. So something like Fruition, which is now like a year-round beer, just kind of was developed on a whim. I was just having fun that day. So,
tell us a little bit about that beer. What is the beer?
I mean, it's basically Witta, and then we incorporated some fruit juices, passion fruit, mango, kiwi. So that gets fermented out. Leaves a really cool tartness. Like, I think it's a lot of the citric acid. And then, again, I was just like, who cares? I'm going to do this. So we dry hopped it. And that's just Cascade and citrus. So it's just, I mean, it was a fun beer. And I guess luckily a lot of people like it. So we're brewing it year round. It's cool.
Speaking of fun, one of my favorite things to do here is to hit that innovation tent where you share some of this fun. How many different beers do you have today in the innovation tent?
Right now, today we'll pour 8 different beers. We have 4 taps. So the first half will be half of them. The second half will be the other half. Some fun stuff, a lot of hops. I got some samples of hops, some of the hop powder I use, like in this triple IPA that we're drinking. Some unnamed stuff from Steiner, you know, just the number stuff. It's interesting to try. We have a Belgian Pilsner today, which is kind of cool. Actually, it's really cool. I like it's it really a lot, cool. Especially when it's hot out. It's very drinkable. Some other fun stuff.
What does Belgian Pilsner mean to you?
I hate to say, I mean, like this beer, this was my first lager anyway, but it turned out nice and crisp and dry, and yeah. It's Saaz hops, noble hops. I think what I was aiming for, just something that's really crisp and clean and dry.
Yeah.
I sometimes I wonder that too, like if people expect a Belgian Pilsner to have spices or, you know, orange peel, coriander, that kind of stuff, but I think a Pilsner just needs to be brewed correctly with very simple ingredients. I don't want to put that into a right. Belgian Pilsner just to call it a Belgian Pilsner.
Right. How many yeasts are being used at Omegang currently?
That's, I hope it's out a lot lately because we have a few brinks. We're actually getting 2 more yeast brinks Monday coming in. So we're able to handle a lot more different strains. Game of Thrones beer that we brewed, which isn't out yet. It'll be the next one out. That's a different Hefeweizen kind of yeast.
Okay.
We're using some other Belgian strains. So it's hard. I mean, our yeast is very discernible. You know it.
Right.
It's phenolic. It's a lot of times you taste the beer and you're like, that's an Omegang beer.
Yeah.
Primarily just because of the yeast. So it's been fun to use different yeast. We're using American ale yeast. We've used some London yeast.
I'm bringing
recently.
This up because in our last interview, and I think 4 years ago, we were primarily using one yeast here at Omegang,
yeah.
and leveraging that through different techniques in order to get the flavors that you wanted. And since then, you guys have expanded or doing or branching out to other yeasts.
Right, yeah. Like before, all we could do was try to manipulate the yeast through temperature or oxygen or something else. Being able to use all these other yeasts as foam, man. I mean, it's an ingredient all its own. So.
And that provides you, as innovation manager, now a little bit more freedoms because there's you're not beholden to set yeast.
Right. It's hard. Like, so. We were talking about the stout. It's difficult with our yeast just because of the phenols. And we're still using a Belgian strain, but it's just a little bit smoother and fruitier, and it seems to work better with the dark malt. So
yeah.
It's nice to have that freedom and capability to actually do that now.
You mentioned the Game of Thrones beers. How many Game of Thrones beers have been put out at this point? As many as
the
there are seasons?
The one that I'm developing is number 10, I believe.
Okay.
So, yeah, and we brought a couple back, you know, and like right now I think we have that gift pack, so you get like Fire and Blood or...
Yeah.
And bend the knee.
So, what are your innovations? Or I mean, what's your inspiration for these beers? Does HBO say they want a particular style, or do they? I mean, or is that
sometimes? A lot of times, yeah. I mean, HBO definitely has input.
Yeah.
It's always been in a 750 ml bottle, so you kind of expect like a 3 or 4% beer. You're kind of usually looking for something bigger.
Yeah.
So maybe higher alcohols.
Something worthy of a king or queen to be on a throne.
I still want to do something wine related. I mean, that just seems what the show is about.
So. Right.
But yeah. I mean, typically they're big beers, and once you get up to 10, you know, how many more ideas do you have? I don't know. Trying to break the mold every time.
Sure.
I think we put out some good stuff. Like, Ben the Knee is great. Like, just as a, you know, Duvel-esque Belgian strong ale. I really enjoy that one. So. And I'm excited for the next one, which is a double white with some salt and pepper in it. So it's...
With salt and pepper?
It's based off the White Walker stuff. So
okay.
It's, yeah, salt and white pepper. But the pepper's great, man. You don't notice it up front, but you swallow it, and then all of a sudden, like, maybe that next breath out, you get that peppery note. It's cool, man. That was a fun one, so I gotta think of one more.
How long does it take for you to get it from the lab or anything into larger production?
It's usually months. I mean, everything is planned out so well here in terms of the labels and art, and I gotta be ahead of that.
Yeah.
Because that might... you know, steer where the art is going and that kind of stuff. So if I develop something, it might still be 6 or 8 months before anybody else can actually drink it.
You have a really impressive lab that we're sitting right next to. So and it's always been clear that quality control has been a big focus and not concern, because there haven't been issues because of preventative measures like this. And I just wanted to put that out there to say I appreciate that. What happens in there to this?
Yeah,
it's just the quality.
As you said, it's just like total quality control. Also testing for bacteria or wild yeast and all that kind of stuff. And we've had great luck with that. We haven't had any of that. It's important, man. I think every brewery at least needs a microscope, you know, needs to count cells. And the more lab work you can actually do, I mean, it's not cheap stuff. That's the problem. But the more you can do... it's an important aspect of the whole brewing business.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Before we started, so we're listening to that background noise is Moonboot Lover, who's playing a small little shindig right next door to us as part of this greater thing. Justin was just saying how he forgot how crazy this party can actually get.
Yeah.
So you've been here 6 years and have seen at least five BCTCs. What have you seen over... What do you like about BCTC?
I guess this is the sixth one. It's just great, man. Everybody's very friendly. Everybody has a great time. Everybody's just here to have fun. There's a ton of great beers. I'm super excited about some of the beers this year. I got to walk around and sample some stuff. I've been super impressed with beers out of like the Hudson Valley area lately that are great. I've been hearing a lot about Buffalo. I don't get a lot of their beers out here, but I guess there's some good stuff up there too.
And they, you know, they come hard as a unit too, because the Buffalo guys, they always camp together, and even with the Buffalo homebrewers up there, and they have like this crazy jockey box setup. You can walk around the campsites and find them, and they, if you just get all Buffalo beers, like something like 12 to 20 draft lines, depending, just at the campsite.
Yeah.
And they roll hard on Friday
night. That part's fun.
I always, you know, seek them out.
Yeah. No, also just, I mean, getting to see a lot of old friends. I mean, brewers that used to brew here that work other places, like Ethan, who works at Harpoon now, man. He's always great to see.
Yeah.
Veltman's around.
Yeah.
A lot of fun people, man.
It's definitely there are diehard followers of this fest, both in and out of the industry, and so every time it's feeling more and more like a reunion. I mean, it's always a reunion, but now it's getting that reunion is getting deep.
I agree with that, and
it's beautiful. It's great, and you guys as hosts have been incredible, and you create a really wonderful welcoming environment. I can't thank the establishment for that.
That's great to hear, man. I mean, our whole event team works like super hard. I mean, this is the biggest weekend of the year for them, so they put on all the concerts during the summer, which are always great too, but like this is the big one. So.
Yeah. Mary and I are being asked to go out to the National Honey Beer Summit soon, and I understand that you went there last year.
Yeah, man, it was cool. I'm allergic to bees, so that
are
part.
You really?
Yeah, dude. Last time I got stung, I swelled up. It wasn't good.
Did you get stung on the trip? Because part of this is
they put us in like bee suits. Okay. We went to like a, what do they call it?
It's a hive, colony.
And then we it's cool. Like when they pull out the, like the honeycomb sheets, that goes into basically like a manual centrifuge, and that's how they get all the honey out of there. It was cool to see, and like, I think DuPont made like the beer DeMille that was like probably one of the best honey beers. Jester King was there. They had a really good honey beer. Anything I tried from them was really good. So I was impressed. There's a guy, I can't remember, he's from a meadery, but it was cool to hear his take on things and how they work everything out, just because it's something I'm not used to doing.
Right.
It's fun, man. You'll have fun.
I'm excited about it. We're really, really excited.
Cool. Everybody's super nice. We did it at Urban Chestnut, which is also a great brewery, which we did a collaboration with, because Phil is friends with the head brewer. They used to work together. But that brewery's great, too, man. You get to drink some good German beers, you know?
We're excited about
that. Yeah.
Well, Justin, thank you so much for giving us some words. And do you have anything to say to the world? We have 10,000 listeners now. Isn't that crazy from around the world?
That's awesome, man.
It's just some forever stuff, so don't mess it up. I'm done. Just some men about it.
Just enjoy your life.
Drink some good beer. Cheers.
Thank you very much for listening to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. This has been a really great season. We got one more for you. Please don't forget to donate. Go to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, click the beating heart, or go to the /donate Jammerang thing and become a member today.
And no donation is too small or too large. Everything is appreciated, seriously.
Absolutely. Foment About It.
Foment About It.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.